Before we begin, please be aware that this episode discusses topics related to stress and anxiety. If these subjects are sensitive to you, please take care whilst listening and pause if you need to.
Let's now talk a little bit about inclusive and accessible law practices, as Axel already mentioned some of them. So when we're talking about laboratories are often designed with that kind of one-size-fits-all approach, but reality is that learners and researchers, they bring wide range of abilities, experiences, and needs into those particular spaces. And laboratories, particularly in fields like chemistry, can feel really much intimidating. They can be quite physical, complex spaces, but also very much cognitively demanding environments as well. If these environments are not designed inclusively, they can unintentionally exclude individuals with disability or neurodivergence, language barriers, or even high anxiety as well. For many students, especially those with disability, neurodivergent traits, mental health conditions, or students who are learning in second language, traditional lab setups sometimes can create unnecessary stress and also barriers as well. And these challenges can really compromise both learning outcomes and also the safety. When a student feels unsure about how to navigate a lab, access instructions, or communicate their concerns, they're more likely to make errors or disengage or even opt out of the lab-based learning environment altogether. So inclusive laboratories, they ensure that all students can participate fully, safely, and confidently. They also improve learning for everyone, not just those with the documented needs. So inclusive and accessible laboratory practices are all about more than just compliance. They are all about equity, about confidence, and about empowerment. So by adapting this into our teaching methods, layouts, and communications, we not only support underrepresented learners, but we also make the laboratories better for everyone. And evidence shows that inclusive laboratories improve safety awareness, reduce anxiety, and foster a culture where students are more willing to ask the questions and really engage fully. Ultimately, that's what a safe, effective, and innovative learning environment should look like. Creating that kind of inclusive and accessible laboratory is all about more than meeting legal requirements. It's about ensuring that everybody, regardless of their background, ability, can really participate fully, safely, and confidently in lab-based learning and research. So let's explore some key practices that really support this particular goal. If we start designing labs for diverse abilities and needs, first we need to consider the physical space. Are labs good enough for everybody to navigate? Are they accessible for the wheelchair users? Do we have adjustable workstations for those with musculoskeletal conditions? Are emergency controls like showers and eye wash accessible to all? So inclusion also means designing for neurodivergence and sensory needs, and this could involve creating quieter working zones or offering noise dampener PPE. So the aim is to minimize uncertainty or unnecessary stress and allow people to really stay focused and safe.
I think the issue here is mostly the problem, I mean, the result for that is a lack of understanding about the differences between stress, common stress, and anxiety. Because when I explained this, for example, to my friend that I need this boundary, I think he found that I'm into antisocial behavior because he thought that anyone has a stress, but it was difficult for me. Even I'm working a lot with the stress and anxiety, how to explain people, but he always thinking that is a kind of antisocial behavior or like a confrontation. So, and because, for example, he said that, "I don't mind if you come and interrupt me." And I said that, "Yes, because for you, it's not happening something that affects on myself, anyone different. You don't have this disability. That's why it's a disability. So, but I have this one, so it's better for us to understand each other." And I try to, for example, send some links based on NHS to show him that understand the situation. That's yes, if I want you not to interrupt me, it's not because of my antisocial behavior or aggressive behavior. This is something that I need this boundary, because then I could continue my work. And this is all coming from this issue that people, it's because it's not their job, but I think at these days it's better for us to understand and have some at least generic knowledge about this kind of the differences.
Yeah, I think the communication is also an important aspect as well, especially when you can communicate that to other people, and also for other people to understand that as well is really much important. And I think also communication is really important, especially under that kind of pressure environment too. Also, that kind of signage with symbols and simple language can really help everybody, including people with, for example, visual impairments or those people from backgrounds that English is second language as well. So we also want to avoid that kind of assuming prior knowledge. And I think that also happened to you, Alexander. Basically, person assume, okay, you can continue to work after I interrupt you without any particular issues. So we need to also think about, okay, am I assuming wrong here, and question our assumptions as well. So even experienced students could benefit from labels or diagrams and also reminders. And this can really reduce down the cognitive load and can support a safer, more confident lab behavior as well. I think it's also important to think about the kind of importance of multimedia and more flexibility with the kind of training approaches as well. So not everybody learn best through the written text or spoken instructions alone. And multimedia formats like videos or illustrated SOPs or interactive guides can reach a much wider audience. Some students, some staff may even benefit from pre-lab walkthroughs or virtual simulations, because this can really reduce anxiety, especially when people are new to the lab or unsure of the expectations. And this is often what we refer to as a graded exposure, when we're confronting the source of stress or source of fear gradually, step-by-step approach. Also, I think what is important with regards to this kind of key practice is think about workspace layouts, the flows. A well organized, decluttered lab with predictable setup can really help to reduce the confusion and stress. It also minimizes the risk by making movement easier and also reduce the distractions too. So workspaces should really accommodate any kind of assistive devices and provide consistent organization so that everybody can actually work safely, especially in high pressure settings like chemistry laboratories. So ultimately, inclusive laboratory design benefits everybody, all students and staff, not just those with formally recognized needs. It supports mental health and well-being, reduces the accidents, builds more equitable and resilient safety culture. So by embedding inclusion into our physical spaces, our communication, our training, and also mentoring, we really ensure that everybody has the opportunity to thrive as well.
Yes, I think this is also playing a significant role for some universities, like with international I mean students, because anyone coming is coming from different culture and different way of thinking, and because of that, in that multicultural scenarios, people need to think the way of I mean confrontation of people. Sometimes people think that if, for example, this guy said this one, I need to say that I don't mind if you do it with me. This is not something that he wants to be confrontational, but he wants to say that, okay, but if you do this with me, it's not happening. So because of that, I can do this for you because I am very, clear, and I'm very, it's easygoing. So it's better to be very easygoing if I interrupt you. So other things that in other ways that, for example, there is a kind of self, what they call it, is a self-thinking about or reading too much of something. And because of that, it can be kind of confrontation with people. For example, something happening to me that I ask my supervisor that someone needed to send something to me, and I asked my supervisor, seemed that she didn't send this to me because my supervisor asked me. And then she said, my supervisor said that, don't worry, I will ask her to send it to you, is a kind of reminder. And I said that it's better not to send this reminder because I found that she is more sensitive. And she was from an Asian country, one of the Asian countries. And when my supervisor sent this and didn't care of my, warning and sent this to my colleague, and after that she called me and said that, why you are talking behind myself to my supervisor, that is, you are trying to weakening my, for example, position in front of my supervisor. Although that my supervisor recognize the situation, because in the, for example, British culture, I think is something that's normal and this is not behind of speaking to someone. But in Asian countries, like even my country that I'm from, Iran, so in that situation it seems that you are talking behind someone, you are trying to weakening this someone or spoiling yourself in front of your supervisor. So in that situation, I found that it's a kind of misunderstanding happening. So this is in office work, but this can be happen in lab work as well. So in that situation, I think we need more understanding or a little bit wider or generic. We can not say that we need to learn all the cultures. I don't know, 180, more than 180 countries we have in the world. So it's not, does not mean that we need to understand or recognize or read about all the culture, but we can somehow understand the situation between the students or other people. Some people talk fast, some people talk slow, some people, think that's a kind of confrontation. Some people think that we are speaking behind them. So this is something sometimes the supervisor, that's why, and then after that, the departments play a significant role in order to solve the situation and find a better cultural friendly for people working in the office during their PhD, for example, or in the lab.
There is some concept which is called cultural humility, which is often prevalent in psychology, which basically acknowledges that we cannot know everything about each and every single culture, but we can use our curiosity to learn more through the kind of conversations with people. For example, if I ask you, can you tell me a little bit more about your customs? Can you tell me a little bit more about your culture? Can you tell me a little bit more about your language? Or a little bit about your food? That basically definitely can help to teach us about different cultures, but also help us to basically adopt that kind of better cultural understanding as well. So cultural humility is really a good term that can describe that particular concept, because we are unable to know every single culture on this planet, and there is a plenty of different cultures. Even within single country, there could be a different cultural differences. So But basically maintaining this kind of stance of humility, we are allowing ourselves to actually use our curiosity to guide us through that kind of uncertainty or unknowing. about this particular culture. So just to summarize, so when we talked about psychological safety in chemistry lab, this is really important because it helps to reduce down the accident, supports mental health and well-being, but also improves the learning outcomes because it fosters that kind of culture where students and researchers feel empowered to really speak up, ask questions, and learn from mistakes without actually fear of being judged as well. We also touched upon a little bit about that kind of importance of culture of continuous learning, formalizing safety reviews, but also the incident reporting, which can further enhance the safety practices in both academic and industrial labs as well. And we know that enhanced hazard evaluation tools and centralized safety databases can really reduce the severity of incidents by identifying risk early and promoting that kind of knowledge sharing as well. We also talked a little bit about the importance of that kind of proactive safety documentation, safety reviews, but also that kind of need for continuous improvement and adaptability of the safety practices too. And implementing these strategies can really help and foster the safety culture in chemical laboratories and ultimately protect researchers and minimize the risk. Through utilization of RAMP, we can ensure that the kind of both physical hazards, but also psychosocial risks are identified, but also managed effectively as well. We talk a little bit about the UDL principle that ensures that all students, regardless of their ability or learning preferences, have that kind of equitable access to learning and that can meaningfully engage in scientific discovery too. And by adopting this flexible instructions, accessible resources, diverse assessment methods, educators can really create chemistry lab experience that fosters participation, motivation, and success for every learner. So by recognizing the laboratory stressors and integrating stress management techniques, students, but also staff, educators can create a safer, but also more productive and inclusive lab environment. So by implementing mindfulness, support communication, structured breaks, this can really reduce lab-related anxiety and ultimately enhance learning and improve safety outcomes as well. We finally touch upon that kind of the importance of inclusive lab practices, and they can definitely improve the safety, engagement, and learning outcomes, but also help to reduce the stress and anxiety by really providing that kind of more predictability, more clarity, and reduce that kind of sense of uncertainty. Also, inclusive lab practices support the full participation of students and also staff with diverse needs as well.